Welcome everyone to episode 42 of the Business of Sport. My name is Ahmed Al-Houli, and as he does every single week, Mr. Rob Yao joins me on the show. Rob, how are you, buddy? How's things?
I'm good, my friend. How are you doing? Happy Tuesday.
Absolutely fantastic, my man. Lots to talk about, lots happening in the world of the business of sport. Huge week. We go straight to London. Lots happening. The NFL is down in London. They've taken over the city. Regardless of all the Premier League, the NFL is there, and they have taken over the city. And what a spectacle they have put on. I mean, NFL now in London is becoming a regular occurrence, a regular feature. The Jaguars are becoming some sort of home team there now. They played back-to-back consecutively, having some fun down there.
Yeah, no, you know, London has, is obviously the home away from home for the NFL, three games there this year. Jaguars kind of make it their second home with their ownership group, and played in Wembley last week. And then this past weekend, the first, NFL hosted game, knocking off the Bills in a big game at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and became the first NFL team to actually play back-to-back weeks in London. And I think it was to their advantage, frankly, this week. They looked like the team that was well-rested and not on jet lag, and a talented Bills team that was coming off a big win over Miami the week previous looked a little sluggish and kind of made it a game late, but all the games sold out over there. A huge fan base, taking in this NFL content. The league has been very savvy in growing the game, and one more week to go, and expect nothing but another spectacular outing there in London.
Games sold out. Millions of dollars in merchandise, economic value of $40 to $50 million on the city of London. What does this mean for NFL teams in London now? Where do we go from here?
Well, you've got several teams that, one of the things that the NFL has done, is kind of granting international rights to some of their clubs. So, the Bears and the Dolphins and the Bills, Jaguars, a few others have marketing rights in London. And so, those are the teams that are playing over there, right now. So what it does for the league, one, first and foremost, it continues to expand the brand. It drives the value of those international, TV rights. I mean, the Super Bowl is still the most, most watched sporting event in the world when it's not the World Cup, right? So it is still, the 800-pound gorilla as it comes to the broadcast rights. So it continues to fuel that fire and prime that pump, so to speak. And look, it's a game that's growing internationally, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on kind of the ways that it's growing. But, it's the highest, we talk about, soccer being played at its highest level in the Premier League. Well, the NFL is the highest level of football. And so it's literally like bringing a Premier League match in season over to New York City and having Man City playing, Tottenham in MetLife kind of thing. I mean, that's kind of the level of what's happening in London right now. And look, over here, it would, that game would sell out in MetLife Stadium to see that level of soccer with a game that actually matters. And certainly the games in London have been, massive. You've got fans coming not only from London, but they're coming from all over Europe to come to that game. It's the one chance that you really get to see the stars play in person, and it's not a preseason game. It is a game that counts in the schedule. So that's a win or loss for somebody. And, that could be, critical down the road when the playoff hits. So, the NFL learned a long time ago when they put together the World League that their brand is held to a very high standard. And when it wasn't being played at the standard that is worthy of the shield, as they say, they made the executive decision to, back out of the league and focus on bringing our first class product to those fans in a way. And obviously we've seen it in Mexico City and in Munich this year, where games are going to be played. They're talking about coming down to your neck of the woods in the near future to bring an NFL game to Australia. So, the NFL is becoming a global league because they have a global fan base, and how do you service your global fan base, each year is, give them something live. And the NFL has been very good about taking their true product to those fans, in those markets. And they have been rewarded with, great crowds, sellout crowds, merchandising, TV rights. And obviously each year, the largest, the most watched, televised event in the world each year.
What do you make of comments made by Roger Goodell about potentially the City of London and Tottenham Hotspur Stadium hosting a Super Bowl one day?
Well, look, Roger's a shrewd businessman. He is, just got an extension to their agreement with Tottenham, another 10 years, in that agreement. And yeah, look, we're a global game at this point. I mean, that is a global spectacle. We're going to be in Vegas this year for the first time. That's an international city when it comes to events like that. And look, London has proven that they are capable of hosting it. The one challenge is that the NFL likes to have, 75, 80, 100,000 people at the Super Bowl, and Tottenham Hotspur sells out at about 65. So, it's a smaller stadium by Super Bowl standards. So the question is, will it be at Hotspur? Well, it has to be. They have a relationship, but how many can they expand it in any way? But it's a realistic possibility because it's a global game, and I'm sure that the City of London will pay a premium to get that.
How would you work around time zones? Because the Super Bowl is usually played in the evening in the US.
That might be a game that's played on a Saturday. So no one's having to get up Monday morning. So it can be played at all hours. And look, I can tell you that, the US market will figure out when to tailgate around it. And no doubt there will be people that will get on a plane and go over, for sure. So it would be it might be something that's done once, just because you can, but, it would certainly be a spectacle and be maybe a once in a lifetime type of deal. But money talks, as they say, and, the teams, you got that 2 week break, hop on a plane and get over there and get acclimated. It's a sure. business trip for those teams, whether it's Vegas, South Florida, here in Phoenix, lots of great locations, being played here in the US. But, when you're a global league, we see the UEFA championship, get moved around to, locations all throughout Europe. If we're going to be that active of a league, and present ourselves, to that international market, I mean, it would be an absolute, must-attend spectacle event there in London.
Will we see any implications on advertising dollars? As we all know, the 30-second slots go for about $67 million. You're not getting the prime time anymore in the US. It's going to be a very different slot. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, again, I think for the novelty of what it is, I think that you still might be able to hold the value on that. You might see it be sold in a different way. Maybe that Super Bowl ad requires a different spend along some other levels within the broadcast, or leading up to it. The advertising business, they're pretty good at finding ways to enhance enhance it. Maybe they drop you on the sphere for a couple minutes, you know, as a make good. Who knows? I think those are matters that will need to be thought out for sure. Again, if it's a one-time thing, a novelty thing, when's the halftime show? Who is the halftime show? Is it the Rolling Stones? What kind of thing, what kind of halftime performance? I mean, there's a lot of really cool things that could happen around it. And I think as an advertiser, you might find some really great ways to spin that. Certainly, a lot of your top buyers are going to want to be there, So
absolutely.
You may find that be, much more of a hospitality driven type of buy than in regular years, but certainly one to keep an eye on for sure.
Perfect segue into the sphere. The Las Vegas sphere had Monday Night Football advertised on it on Monday night in Vegas. Reports are still circulating on the internet, on X specifically is where I saw it, that 4 hours, $450,000. Did the NFL pay $450,000 for advertising on the?
You know what? My guess is that the bartering world is alive and well when it comes to that. I'm pretty sure. I would doubt that any money changed hands because the Sphere got a pretty good feature on Monday Night Football, both on the aerial coverage as well as a lot of the verbal commentary of on the air last night with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. I think for events like that, there's a little bit of quid pro quo going on because, Monday Night Football is obviously big for the city. It's big for, and they're going to build one of those in London. So maybe they're just kind of teeing this thing up and getting ready for Super Bowl coming in later this year. Obviously, there was some Formula One advertising going on. Now they're an event that's trying to sell tickets, coming up. So I wouldn't doubt that maybe Formula One stroked a check to be on there. But when you've got Monday Night Football, you've got an ESPN broadcast that's kind of dominating the night, and you get another 3.5-4 minutes of coverage of your venue that you're trying to sell advertising to, on a major network. I think there's probably been a little, a little wink, wink, nod, nod. Yeah, I'll put your logo up. You cover it. You talk nicely about us on the air, and we'll call it good, So.
Well, there you go. we'll stay in football. We'll move to college football. Of course, the conversation has to move. Good win over the weekend against your hometown, ASU. Close game, good game, solid game. Not really the conversation. We're more interested in the off-field stuff. what was the city of Arizona like, or which city was it? Was it fighting? Sorry, not the state of Arizona, but which city exactly?
Tempe. Yeah, I mean it's Tempe. It's where ASU is. I mean, it was a sold out game. Problem was it was on the Pac-12 network, so you couldn't find it. You had to, if you weren't there, you were probably following the score on your phone or
on Twitter,
because you weren't getting any updates from the Pac-12 network on Twitter, for whatever reason. You really didn't, and I can't find the Pac-12 network on any, I've got DirecTV and I can't find it. So, cause it's not there. From two things. One, it was a competitive game, which you mentioned, one, Colorado needed a bounce back win after the two losses. ASU is a team that's in transition, new coaching staff, going through some changes with personnel, got some injuries. You got some transfer guys that haven't been made eligible by the NCAA, yet other players in similar situations were granted eligibility last week. That's a topic of discussion later. But for the most part, you saw a very competitive game. at the end of the day, they're college kids. They all want to win. And you saw, you know, pretty much a walk-off field goal and a win for Coach Prime's team. And, you know, those are, you know, a good win for them. I mean, obviously, I think it was a, you know, good for the city to have a, you know, competitive game and obviously have a sold out crowd. It's a great atmosphere. That's what you want to see in college athletics. And I know that's what Coach Kenny Dillingham is really striving to build here in Arizona, you know, get out there, support the kids. You know, obviously he would have loved to have won that game. But, you know, Coach Prime just has a better team right now, or a healthier team, I should say. And obviously his son, you know, played great down the stretch to, you know, to secure that win. And in typical NIL fashion, was quick to flash the watch. And I don't know if you saw today, but Coach Prime said, my son's got to quit doing that for free. It's time for him to get an NIL deal on that watch. Because that's a watch. That's not, you know, ironically, it's not an NIL deal that has him go do that. It's just, you know, what time it is. You know, it's just kind of his signature.
Yeah, but how much is that watch worth? It's like a ridiculous amount of money.
Sure it is. You know, there, you know, somewhere out there, there's a smart marketer going, okay, you know, if he keeps doing that, keeps winning, and, you know, we can get on that wrist, then, you know, you saw that Dave Portnoy and his brick watch company just launched an NIL deal to raise money for you know, the collective at Ole Miss. So they're selling watches and kicking money back to the collective. So I would imagine Shedeur Sanders is, you know, could maybe sell a few watches in Colorado if he aligned himself with someone.
Oh, I mean, he's got stars watching him every single week, so there's plenty of money to go around. Yeah.
But and look, he's playing great too. I mean, he is one of the top three, you know, performing quarterbacks in, you know, in this season right now. So not only has he got a great name, he's a great personality and a great kid, he's also, you know, playing at a high level on the field, which, you know, that's a great combination to have.
Extremely important. Speaking of Shedeur Sanders, these NIL valuations, how are they coming up with them? That they reckon he's worth $1.8 to $2 million, apparently, a deal. And so, like, what's the formula here based off what?
Well, you know, and when you're dealing with, you know, name, image, and likeness and things of that nature, you know, you kind of, you know, there's something called a Q rating, and that's something in the industry that kind of helps you value, you know, what someone's worth. I mean, there's also their social media presence, which, you know, is something that's tangible that you can evaluate. It's something that we look at when we're, you know, measuring deals for properties. I mean, you know, having a strong following, and, you know, certainly we've seen the University of Colorado itself become one of the top five followed schools, for, you know, the fifth school to go over 1 million followers.
Yeah.
At 50,000 when they started the season. So, you know, we talked, you know, a few months ago about how quickly Inter Miami became, you know, jumped into that when Messi signed. You know, same type of, you know, effect happening in Colorado on the college football level with Coach Prime, and just, you know, the Buffs are winning. They're 4-2. You know, after a one-win season. So, you know, there's a lot of excitement, enthusiasm around that. And so, you know, these NIL ratings are certainly driven a lot by, you know, what's your exposure, you know, what's your following. And look, these wins and losses and your personality and what type of content are you putting out there kind of create some value for yourself as well. I mean, if Colorado's 1-5 and Shedeur Sanders is, you know, hadn't thrown for 1,000 yards and has 6 interceptions, maybe he's not as valuable, but, you know, certainly he's Deion's kid, and he's got some cachet to him, and he's playing at a high level. The team's winning, and, you know, all of those things kind of combine to a perfect storm to raise your value. I mean, you know, and obviously football is a sport to be very valuable, and football and basketball tend to be the ones that drive it. For the women in the space, you know, there's other factors. Obviously, it's not necessarily as much sport driven. We just saw Caitlin Clark, you know, announced today with State Farm as her first NIL deal. But we've seen, you know, athletes, you know, gymnasts, Livy Dunn, you know, is probably one of the most notorious at this point, signing deals because of her content, and more importantly, I mean, she's great to look at, I mean, at some level, attractive, young ladies on the internet and on social media, tends to draw a following. She's got a massive following. You've got other, great athletes, Angel Reese is another top one, but she's also a top player at a top program, just won a championship. And she's very, very outgoing, very, great personality. And those are things that brands want to associate with. Exactly. So, those are all factors that jump in there. And then what I will say at the end of the day, what that value is, you and I can sit here and say someone's worth $2 million, $1 million, $750,000. At the end of the day, it's what the brand's willing to pay.
Exactly.
And that's the ultimate determining factor. And, I get a chance to sit on both sides of that table sometimes, work for the property, if you will, and the athlete, or I work for the brand that's trying to make a decision. So a lot of cases, the one with the checkbook can dictate the price.
I just don't see a lot of these valuations coming to life. I think at the moment, they're all this rhetoric that's on the internet that's creating conversation.
It's great. It's a great negotiating tactic if you're representing the athlete. And it's certainly one as a, if I'm sitting on the brand side, I'm running analytics on that and going, hey, you said, I don't know where you're getting this $2.5 million valuation. Maybe. And again, part of that is what they're worth collectively. So, we're not trying to buy you out exclusively for $2.5 million. We may come in and say, hey, $250,000 deal. That just adds into your portfolio value. So, and that's what those values are, portfolio value, not per deal kind of thing.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Skip Bayless made some very strong comments saying that Colorado should offer Coach Prime $100 million for the next 3 years.
Well, we saw we've talked about it. We've talked about the economic impact. We've talked about the enrollment increase in University of Colorado. We just talked about their social media going over 1 million, one of five schools to do that. He's worth the money, right?
$30 million Sabres on 11 and a half.
Yeah. Well, again, this is not your normal deal, right? Colorado went from, literally off the map to the center of college football in a matter of, 8 months since hiring him. And the economic impact to the school, to the university, to the community, all of that has been massive. And we talked about how he's already paid for his $30 million contract. Right.
Yeah.
And I think I even saw that they offer him a lifetime contract. Why wouldn't you, you don't need, if you're happy here and you're successful here. And again, success is going to be the key. Is he getting the players? Is he winning games? I mean, this is all fun and games for a year. And if he goes 2-10 the next 2 years, it's not so cool anymore. Because if he's not getting the players, then you don't want, he's not going to want to stay, regardless of the money. But I think it's an interesting, a concept. I mean, certainly a Colorado is going to have to pay a premium. Obviously, they paid a premium to get him. Now they're going to what they've created is they've created a more valuable commodity at some level.
Some numbers to validate what you're basically saying is that these are numbers that have come out recently. Colorado will benefit $150 million economically from this football season via increased admissions, ticket sales, donations, and merchandise. There's a 40% increase on year to date with out-of-state applications. Merch sales are up 892%. So he's definitely bringing the goods.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But
here's what he also is going to do. His success and if he renegotiates his deal, which he may, and maybe they come back and they offer him a new deal. There's a lot of college coaches out there that are going to be making some money if Prime gets his money. You know,
he lifts the bar.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, Nick Saban and a Kirby Smart and Lincoln Riley and you know, just you know, you start rattling off the teams that are in that, you know, the top 10 are going to just turn around and go, okay, Colorado's paying that, you know, and of course, you know, they're happy to be 4-2. There's, you know, we know that, you know, if you're at Alabama, you're at Georgia, you're at USC, 4-2 right now would probably get you fired.
Yeah, very shaky.
4-2 has got him getting a massive increase. But I mean, absolutely, to your point, you highlighted, you know, for the past 10 years, this program or longer was irrelevant. Yeah. And now they're relevant again. And I don't think they want to go back to, you know, where they were. And so the goal is, you know, to stay this way. And I mean, obviously in Alabama and Georgia have built a long tradition, you know, with the Kirby Smart or Nick Saban at the helm. That history and establishment is there. But, you know, a Coach Prime basically changed the trajectory of Colorado as a university and as a football program. And as we know, the rising tide, you know, raises all ships. So, you know, other sports programs are going to see that. You know, we've seen it, you know, with donations, we've seen it with applications to the school.
Yeah.
Those are all things that are
everything
byproducts of a successful program and a charismatic, you know, man that's attracting, you know, students that want to be part of that culture, you know, part of that experience. And then obviously more importantly, there are, you know, top players in the country that are now saying, I want to go play for Coach Prime of Colorado, that otherwise wouldn't have, you know, had them even on their list.
Absolutely. Well, at crazy times, let's see how things play out. But I think he will be there for a few years to come and make a lot of money while he's at it. But we wish him all the best.
Absolutely.
Moving on, Los Angeles 2028 Olympics. It's been announced they've added a few sports. Let's have a look at them. Cricket, flag football, baseball, softball, all very popular American college sports and national sports other than cricket, which is making its way up now. The Cricket Global Governing Body, the IOC, said that adding the 2028 games in Los Angeles could command an additional $268 million in media money from India alone back in May. So always strategic moves when it comes to the US market. There's no filling the gaps. You're either adding value or you're missing out, and we're seeing this firsthand.
Absolutely, and we've talked in previous episodes about the launch of the cricket league over here. You know, look, that is obviously well planned, well timed. And if cricket is going to be something that's in the Olympics, it would make a lot of sense for the American, you know, sports audience to get a chance to go see it. Because
for sure,
you know, admittedly, you know, one, you know, I'm familiar with the game and obviously familiar with the numbers of sponsorship, you know, that go on those jersey kits and the value that it holds in those countries where it's a popular sport, India and your neck of the woods down in Australia, and obviously up in the UK.
Pakistan,
yeah, that, you know, the respective regions. But if you're going to, you know, put that into the Olympics, you know, you want that to be a much more, you know, relevant sport, certainly here in the US. Makes a lot of sense to have, you know, have that consumer to be able to go see it, learn it, you know, understand it. Cause, you know, even though I understand the, you know, the monetary value of it, I still couldn't tell you how you score and, you know, why a game takes 3 days and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, and, you know, that's the ignorance that I think, you know, having it, putting the Olympics out there as a exciting, lots of scoring kind of game.
Big party.
So if yeah. Yeah. And that could be great. I mean, and, you know, and we, and I must say that, you know, lacrosse is another sport that was, is on, under consideration. And, I did put a tweet out this week that, my window to be an Olympian has yet to close now that, lacrosse has been entered into the Olympics. So I still have a chance, slim chance, but I still have my chance.
Keep the faith, keep the faith, right. and keep training, my man.
That's right.
All right, this, which brings us to the end of our episode. And as I do with every single episode, I come to you for some parting words.
Well, You know, a couple things. Obviously, we've got it was a weekend of NFL football, and we didn't have to watch Taylor Swift in the suite, so I was excited about that. So, you know, that was good. We're entering into another week. Lots of coming down the stretch. You know, as we're starting to see the college football landscape lay itself out. You know, we're starting to the start of NHL and the last few preseason games of the NBA. So we'll start to see the transition into, you know, a couple more pro leagues. We're in the playoffs of baseball. We've got the Orioles, who won the East for the first time in 30 years, get swept out today. We're looking at, the Dodgers down 0-2 coming here to try to stave off elimination in a five-game series with the Diamondbacks. So this business continues to give us the unexpected, as we say, especially in the postseason. So, you know, between now and when we convene next week, we're hoping for we're hoping for the world that we live in to get itself together, so that we can all get back to enjoying sport, as something we love, not as a diversion from the nastiness that's going on in the world. But, you know, look, our thoughts and prayers are for all involved. I've got a client that is based out of Israel, so I'm thinking about them. I'm thinking about anyone that has loved ones and friends there. So, look, we're not taking sides. We just want peace. And sports is the ultimate, playground for us to maybe get away from that for a moment. And so these next couple of days, we'll certainly utilize that, but we're going to keep everybody in our thoughts and prayers and certainly, look for some exciting action on the field here in the week to come.
Absolutely. And one more, Messi's Inter Miami, unfortunately, will be missing the playoffs. Not the greatest of news, but as soon as Messi dropped out, unfortunately, they struggled a bit, and that's me being nice. But we wish them all the best.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one to follow for lots of reasons. But the rumored return on a transfer back to Barcelona for him to kind of get his proper farewell. Obviously he hasn't been in top form, been a little nicked up, and that's the reason he wasn't playing. And it certainly showed on the field with Inter Miami to where they, fell out of playoff contention in MLS. And at some level, I think he did his job. They went on that run. They won League's Cup. They got qualified into CONCACAF. They're apparently going to take a tour into a couple other countries, in November, because they won't be playing in the playoffs. So they get a chance to, showcase some other players. But if I'm Messi, I use this opportunity to get healthy. And I think a loan back to Barcelona could be quite interesting for him, so he can get his proper send-off. But I do not think it will extend to the point to where he is not available for the start of the Inter Miami season, because they have sold ticket prices or ticket renewals on the fact that he is going to be there. They have, I think that he will have an opportunity maybe for a mini window to go back and play in Barcelona so he can get properly sent off. But sadly, it won't be in Camp Nou because that's under construction.
Yeah, I think if that does occur, that'll be suicide for David Beckham. But anyway, we can talk more about that next week. All right, everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you, Rob. Once again, everyone, take care. We'll catch you all next week on the Business of Sport. See ya.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care.